So I'd like to, as you know, I'm going to open the second session of the afternoon. It's my pleasure to introduce Christian Fleiderer, and he's going to tell us many things about ischemia, in particular emergence, nucleation, stability of ischemia lattice order.
Right, thanks very much. So I suppose it's obligatory to thank the organizers for the invitation to speak and present our work, and I'd like to extend that thanks for inviting me to participate in a workshop that actually overlaps with another event. So coming here, I realize that there are a lot of other colleagues also here. So I think it's really worth it. So when I was thinking about the things I want to talk about, I realized that it's best to structure my talk into two parts. And the first part will be about those things that I will not talk about. And then the second part will be about those things that I do want to talk about. The reason being that usually you end up I end up giving a really extensive introduction, and that makes it kind of tedious towards the end of the talk to keep in time. Probably I'll fail nonetheless. Okay, so this is the focus of this talk. I want to talk about this phase diagram of MNSI, and sure enough, this thing fails. Just see if I can do this with this one. Let's see. Well, perhaps it's just a loose contact. It's a test for the experimentalist, thanks. The focus is basically the transition from the paramagnetic state into the skirmion lattice. There's a lot of work going on basically addressing the transition from the skirmion lattice into these other ordered phases, and the issue is basically how does the topology change and what are the mechanisms, how the topology changes. The focus of this work here is basically how to go from the paramagnetic state to the skirmion lattice, and are there precursor phenomena, and what's the nature of these precursor phenomena that we might see in the paramagnetic state. And in a way, this summarizes the key results. Yes, we do see extended fluctuations in this regime. So this is the neutron scattering signature, and this is neutron spin echo, and that basically tells us that they are very, very slowly fluctuating on nanosecond time constant with nanosecond time scales, and then they basically condense at this point here. And by virtue of an analogy with crystallization in liquids and crystals, actually one can call this a weak crystallization. Right, my collaborators are Andy Bauer and Felix Rucker, who prepared the samples, in neutron scattering, Jonas Kindervater, and in particular Sebastian Mühlbauer and Christian Franz, who are in charge of the small angle scattering beamline and the neutron spin echo beamline. And we've done fMRI experiments with Dirk Grundler, who's now in Lausanne. In particular, we have a very long-standing collaboration with Markus Garst, who supported us here. Right, so results I will not talk about, and this is basically in the spirit of motivating a little bit what I want to talk about in the second half. So the starting point for this entire business with the skirmions is this phase diagram of MNSI, where we discovered in this tiny pocket this skirmion lattice phase. And so here's a depiction of the skirmion lattice phase, and the real surprise at the time, and one of the two of the key results were that these skirmions basically give rise to an additional contribution in the Hall effect. And then when you apply an electric current, and so this is depicted here, these skirmions start to float at very low critical current densities, about 10 to the 6, 6 orders of magnitude smaller than what is usually seen in spin transfer torque experiments. And this can be described with an emergent electrodynamics. And so that basically generated a lot of interest. Okay, now the nice thing about this particular system is that this material can be described in a very simple and straightforward way. It was already in Landau-Lifschitz that explicitly stated that these materials, MNSI and related compounds, are can be described by this hierarchy of energy scales, where you have on the strongest scale ferromagnetic exchange. Then you have leading order Chelyushinsky-Maria spin orbit coupling terms due to the lack of inversion symmetry, and then on a yet weaker scale, magnetic anisotropy. So these are the usual cubic magnetic anisotropies in higher order terms. And I'll get back to this later on. And now the stabilization mechanism for the skirmion lattice is basically can be seen in just the Ginzburg-Landau theory. If you start out And you take along the Chelyuchinsky-Maria interaction and the standard fourth order term. And then it was Benedict and Achim and then Ashwin Vishwanath who realized that actually this fourth order term here decomposes into some cubic term coupling to uniform magnetization. And then if you take into account thermal fluctuations, you basically get exactly the phase diagram that is observed experimentally. Okay, so this is basically something that I will come back to later. Nowadays, we have a lot of different skirmium materials. There's a huge zoology of different skirmium compounds. There are these cubic systems, but there are many other bulk materials. So in a sense, almost every system lacking inversion symmetry is potentially a candidate for hosting skirmions. And so surfaces and thin film systems are also particularly amenable to hosting skirmions. And in addition, and this is one of the recent developments, there are now skirmions also cited in centrosymmetric systems, so it seems to be something which is rather ubiquitous. Now, as I said, this remarkable observation was that electric currents can push these things around, and at the same time, they're topologically different to the adjacent states, ordered phases, and so a natural question to ask is, how does the topology basically change? How large is the energy barrier associated with that? What is the mechanism for nucleating skirmions? And so there's a lot of work going into this, right? So in some early work, what we did is with MFM. This was done in Lukas Eng's group in Dresden on this iron cobalt silicon system, this particular system here. We found on the surface of bulk samples that there's a merging of skirmion tubes. And this can be interpreted in terms of like a defect that basically acts as a zipper, zipping together skirmions or unzipping skirmions. Some work from Tokura and collaborators on the distribution of energy barriers, basically controlling this thing here, considered like quenched skirmion phases. But one of the big problems in this work was that it's not clear exactly what the energy scales are. This is work that I don't have the time to cover, but it's just to show that we now found a way with a master curve scaling analysis to really show that we have a distribution of energy scales. And the main contribution is here essentially like the exchange interactions. And then we have a broad range of defect-related pinning that explains some of this supercooling or kinetically arrested phenomena. Okay, a different example for studies into the decay mechanisms and stabilization mechanisms is used. This is work that was carried out in Regensburg using Lorentz transmission electron microscopy. So you basically make thin films and thereby you change the energetics, of course, because then our surface dominated, but you can see through the samples. And this is an example where under decreasing field for a quenched skirmion lattice phase, we get basically the zipping together. So as a function of time, the skirmions basically merge. And then by increasing the field, there's a different mechanism now. It's not the zipping, but it's basically a stripping out of skirmions. So individual skirmions just basically disappear out of the material. This is to say there are different mechanisms, and this is part of what the community is really interested in. Last year, we reported in this particular compound, this copper selenate, which is in the same has the same space group than the MNSI, that there is also a second a skirmion phase at low temperatures at this boundary between this conical, or if you wish, the spin-flop phase and the field-polarized phase, as well as at high temperatures. And the reason for, or the origin of this phase here is a it's a cubic magnetic anisotropy as opposed to thermal fluctuations. It turns out that this is accompanied by something that's called a tilted conical phase. So the cubic anisotropies basically force this conical alignment that happens of these helical modulations at intermediate fields then to tilt away before the skirmion phase happens. And it turns out doing these first order reversal curves that we can show that this tilted conical phase is a precondition for getting into the low temperature skirmion phase. So again, this is just a slide to motivate, and this is something I will not talk about in this talk. It's just as in sense like an appetizer to show you that there's a lot of work focusing on the transitions between different ordered phases and how the skirmions disappear. Similar things in thin films. So this is like work in Hamburg, likewise here, using a spin polarized STM in thin films, where a current pulse or spin polarized current is used for writing skirmions in these palladium iron layers here on an iridium substrate, or here in iron on an iridium substrate. And here's a proposal, theoretical proposal from Karin, basically addressing the generation of skirmions and antiskirmion pairs with electric current pulses. In fact, there's also a lot of work now on skirmions in related to bubbles and bubble materials. So this is a similar situation where electric currents are used, and they basically blow textures here through this constriction. This is from Axel Hoffmann's group, and they generate the skirmions this way. And here's some example from Matthias Gloy's group. Okay, now where I want to go with this is that for a long time we've known that in MNSI, for instance, these signatures that are frequently interpreted for evidence as skirmions, notably these topological Hall contributions, survive in the paramagnetic state when we apply pressure. So as we suppress the long-range helical order, when we apply a small field, we do see a topological Hall signal out here in this regime, right? And we've seen something similar, so it's not just pressure that can do this, but we've also seen this under iron doping, right? And under iron doping, there's a regime out here where seemingly in the paramagnetic state, we do get a topological Hall signal. And the question is, what is the origin of this topological Hall signal? Okay, in fact, we posted this paper summarizing the results that I'm presenting here last night, and I got an email overnight, and this is related to this recent discovery in this gadolinium-palladium system where skirmions have been sighted due to geometric frustration and Sampa Kumaran pointed out that for a long time they've been considering that actually in the paramagnetic state there's some precursor effect, and that basically that may also be related to some kind of topological texture. So the question is simply, how does this topological texture arise out of this paramagnetic state, since normally for a change of topology you have to do some sort of like cutting and gluing things together, right? And obviously there you have strong fluctuations. So what's the validity of thinking about topological protection there? Right, so this brings me to the second part of this talk, right? And this is what the results that I do want to talk about. And since the chain of arguments is kind of rather subtle, what I want to do is just basically go step by step through this, right? And provide the information to understand this a little bit as we go along. So there are four parts. Right, or four sections, and as a prelude, the first question you can ask about what happens at a zero magnetic field, since there's been a prediction for a long time that actually at zero magnetic field there should be a skirmion phase happening, right? So this is basically the longitudinal stiffness, and there was a prediction as you cool the system down that you would get a skirmion, spontaneous skirmion phase at zero magnetic field. This was motivated by this peak hump structure and the specific heat that had been seen for a long time ago. And it turns out, actually, this is nothing to do with skirmion and skirmion liquid. There's a different explanation, as I'll show in a second. Nonetheless, there were some claims based on polarized neutron scattering that this is due to like a skirmion fluctuations or skirmion liquid, I think it was called at the time. So, if you do small-angle neutron scattering, this is this phase diagram. What I'm really interested in is basically this transition here, but let's focus at zero field for the moment. And as we go up in temperature, right, this is the scattering due to this helical order. The crystal has been aligned such that you only see one domain, and you basically get these sharp spots. And then as you go across the transition, right, you get within a very small temperature step, you get a huge amount of scattering on the surface of the sphere. Right, and that basically means there are fluctuations in a large phase space, right? And so it's a fluctuation-induced first-order transition. And in fact, this can be captured, so this is something that Markus Gass and Mike Janoszek worked out, can be captured with a theory proposed by Brzozowski, and this is now looking at the correlation taken from the susceptibility and from neutron scattering. And one can distinguish these different regimes at high temperatures. One has basically like a ferromagnetically fluctuating state, and as one approaches the transition temperature. So this is taking the correlation length from neutron scattering here with decreasing temperature, actually in this direction. Right, then the fluctuations at first see the Shchelyapinsky-Maria interactions, and you get a lot of fluctuations with the modulation length of the Shchelyapinsky-Maria interaction, and then they start to lock in. And because there is so much phase space for this, basically they suppress the transition temperature that you would expect in mean field theory. Right, so this is a suppression by about a Kelvin and a half, and that explains this peak hum structure. Okay? In fact, we went back and looked at this neutron scattering that had claimed the Skirmion liquid and could show that this was actually, as we believe, an erroneous interpretation. It turns out that if you have strong fluctuations here, you can ask, what does a magnetic field do? If you apply a magnetic field, you quench these fluctuations, and so you should be able, so in fact, this is weakly first order, you should be able to recover a second order transition as you suppress this mechanism, right? And this is something that we found at first in the specific heat, so this is the heat capacity divided by temperature, four different magnetic fields basically going, showing the evolution as a function of temperature here across this phase diagram. And as you can see, the shape, which is here symmetric and like a broadened delta peak, right, it goes over into a lambda type of peak, and we also saw in this particular experiment evidence that this is a thermodynamic phase, so the anomalies of this Skirmion-Lattice phase. Even so, we have this evidence, and there's ultrasound absorption measurements which suggested or are perfectly consistent with a suppression of the first order transition around here so that you get a second order transition here. Nonetheless, there's been a claim a few years ago based on small angle scattering in neutron spin echo spectroscopy that the transition stays first order everywhere going up. And that's kind of nonsense, and we, to put it very short, I think that basically they don't have any evidence for that. To perhaps go one step further, we've done some more experiments in this direction. And first of all, going through this tricritical point, the character of these fluctuations changes quite dramatically. So going up in temperature again, we see within a very small step in temperature that the fluctuations are now suppressed. They basically are along the field direction, right, within like a small phase space. This is characteristic of this tricritical point, and in fact, we've also seen mode softening in inelastic scattering. And now fitting basically this Prasovsky model to the correlation lengths and looking also at the line widths in the quasi-elastic neutron scattering, everything seems to be consistent with the suppression along this line here, and then you get a tricritical point. So far, so good. So how about this weak crystallization of fluctuating Skirmion textures? And the first step here is this, do we see precursor phenomena in the bulk properties? And in order to appreciate a little bit what we've done here, is I need to just point out that we've measured the longitudinal as well as the transverse susceptibility with respect to the applied field. This is now the field direction. This is basically the susceptibility going across this phase diagram, covering these different phases. And then you can see basically different features. And what we're doing at first here is feature tracking. I'm pointing this out because I don't have the time to explain what the different features mean, but we do have a very good understanding of these. And for instance, if you do the longitudinal susceptibility where the excitation is parallel to the DC field, you get a suppression in this Skirmion-Lattice phase, whereas you get like an enhancement in the Skirmion-Lattice phase if you do the transverse susceptibility. So here's a summary of these results, and this is color coding basically what is shown here. The Skirmion-Lattice phase, basically there's a huge regime where the signature, this suppression, survives into the paramagnetic state. And there's a corresponding signature in the transverse susceptibility. All right, so that basically tells us there's something going on. Right, it's consistent with the signature that we know from the ordered state, but of course we have absolutely no clue what it is in microscopically. The next question is what's the microscopic nature of this precursor phenomena that we see in the bulk properties? And the simplest thing is to do small angle neutron scattering. These measurements are done on spherical samples to make sure that we don't have some funny demagnetization effects, distribution of internal fields. So now here I do a temperature scan going through the Skirmion-Lattice phase, so it's the same story again. And here I'm in the Skirmion-Lattice phase where basically I get this sharp six-fold reflections for this hexagonal lattice. So the neutron beam is parallel to the applied field. And then As we go into the paramagnetic state, we basically see this ring of scattering. It looks very much like this, not like that, with a little bit of six-fold intensity on top of it. Right? And God knows what causes this. So this basically took us a long time to sort out. So when you go higher in temperature, you end up again like with these strong fluctuations, as they're seen here, and then finally go to the ferromagnetics, paramagnons. Okay, so looking closer at the sands across the Skirmin lattice transition, when we go into this paramagnetic state, we basically looked at these two configurations. One time is the field along the neutron beam, and we get in the Skirmin lattice, in the paramagnetic state, we get this six-fold intensity, which I showed you just now, and then plotting the azimuthal dependence, so going around the circle here, you can see this nice six-fold dependence into the paramagnetic state. One of the issues that concerned us for a while is that actually at the same time, this is now looking in a different, under a different angle, in the Skirmin lattice phase, this is the intensity, this is looking at the six-fold pattern from the side, right? But there's also some conical intensity from the other phase, and, in the paramagnetic state, it looks like there's quite a lot of intensity in these conical fluctuations. And so the question is what is the nature of these paramagnetic fluctuations? Is it really dominated, or is this accidental that we see something there? Right. So one has to carefully integrate, right, and keep in mind that what we see here, right, is basically intensity which is distributed over a large ring, and there's actually quite a lot of weight in that. Okay, now, so we've seen that these fluctuations where in the susceptibility we get these precursor phenomena, there is some signatures of something that looks Skirmion-like, but then the question is it compatible with everything else we know about the system? And so the question now is what's the influence of the magnetocrystalline anisotropies on the Skirmin lattice order? Right? Are the correlation lengths long enough? Right? Are the patches big enough so they can lock in on this very weak anisotropy potential? And what we've done in a different study is we studied a spherical sample where we looked at the orientation dependence in the Skirmin lattice phase. So this is now mapping out basically by rotating the sample into different directions. And what you find here is that the Skirmin lattice pattern basically changes a little bit, right? It wobbles back and forth and it rotates. And this can be perfectly explained, right, with the fourth and sixth order terms, anisotropy terms, a very well known and very well understood terms. I think Karin has like all of them in her thesis. So one can basically understand this rotation, this realignment when you go into particular crystallographic directions, right? It's a 15 degree rotation. This is something which is due to the sixth order terms, very weak pinning potential. And then we have a very small meandering, basically a tilting back and forth of the Skirmin lattice. This is essentially like the cubic anisotropy that we see there. So everything's good. In fact, looking at the relative angles on the with respect to each other, it's like always 120 degrees. So this is like a rigid tripod, right, which is just moving in this anisotropy potential. Right? So there's no change of the modulation of these modulation or these angles with respect to each other. Now going back to our neutron scattering results in the paramagnetic state, this is now for different temperatures, increasing temperatures, we can analyze the correlation lengths and consider whether they're consisting with the pinning potential that we have from this very weak magnetic anisotropies. And basically one can express this in terms of locking scales, right? So if the correlations basically exceed a length of about 26 angstroms, then we will see the Chiolo-Chinsky-Maria interactions. This is precisely what happens at zero field when you approach in the paramagnetic state the helical transition, right? As the correlations grow and they exceed 26 angstroms, they start to go onto the surface. Right? The same study basically also provided a length scale for when we start to lock onto the cubic anisotropies. So this is about 170 angstroms. And then by virtue of comparison of these two, one can then get an estimate that we would basically expect the Skirmion lattice, if there are Skirmion fluctuations, to lock in and show us a six-fold pattern in the paramagnetic state if the correlation length exceeds about 1,000 angstroms. Okay? And now basically analyzing the data, right, we find that this is perfectly consistent with the data. So what we see here are correlation lengths of that sort of order of magnitude, and it matches up with the anisotropy anisotropies that we have. Okay, now seeing these things, right, one can ask, well, is this static or dynamic? Right? I'll keep an eye on the time. And of course, one wants to make sure, right, that this is not accidentally trapped or something like this. So what we did for these measurements is look into the lifetime, and the natural thing to do is inelastic neutron scattering. MNSI has a very sort of long history in this context. Actually, it was the first material where paramagnons were observed over the entire Brillouin zone. So this is some very famous work from Lonsrich and Maria, where they managed to estimate the transition temperature taken from these fluctuations. However, if you go very, very slow, close to TC, and if you look at small q, you need resolution on the microelectron volt range. And this is not something you can do on a simple triple axis spectrometer. You need a special spectrometer. And we've done this here on this beamline Reseda, which has taken the last 5 years to really beef up to do these experiments in this neutron spin echo. In one sentence, so this is a classical spin echo beamline, and what you do is you encode the energy transfer in the polarization of the neutron beam. So you make the neutron polarization precess, right, and it's basically like a clock that tells you the speed of the neutrons when they travel, and as they do like an energy transfer, right, the amount of precession you get in the incoming arm and the outgoing arm differ, right, and this difference tells you very accurately what the energy transfer is. And you get sub-microelectron volt resolution. The big problem with this is, however, the analyzers in the back here, so you're sensitive to magnetic fields, and what we want to do is a measurement in the Skirman lattice phase, so we cannot simply use the standard spin echo spectrometer to do this experiment. So what we've set up is a special type of technique where this polarization is generated with so-called resonant spin flippers, and then they basically operate at slightly different frequencies, generate a beating, and then you can place the analyzer in front of the sample, and you get the type of results that we wanted to have. So this is the beamline, and here are some typical data, but this is not MNSI, it's just to illustrate what you get, because you have to think a little differently about these data. So this would be a normal spectrum. As you see, this is for holmium titanate, right? So this is to calibrate. This is a spectrum that you expect if you have quasi-elastic scattering in S of Q and omega, right? And if you have broadening of the spectrum. If you have an inelastic excitation, it's at finite energy with some broadening. What we measure is the intermediate scattering function, S of Q and tau. And S of Q and tau, for this thing here, basically looks like an exponential decay. So this is as a function of time, right? If you have an inelastic excitation on top of it, you get an oscillation overlaying. Right, so this is typical data. This is a crystal field excitation that we get here, what we see in MNSI. This is now in a magnetic field going across this phase, and we find this is the elastic scattering, right, from the Skirman lattice, and we have a finite line width here, and this is sort of like of the order of microelectron volts. Right? A standard triple axis spectrometer, cold triple axis, gives you about 25 microelectron volts. So this is really way below what you can do with a standard technology. If you convert this into lifetimes, it means these fluctuations hang around for about nanoseconds. Okay. Now, final bit. How in all of the world do we know that this is not just single Q fluctuations, but they really have already this topological character? And the trick that we played here, or we looked into, is microwave resonance. So the excitations themselves contain the topological content. If you look in the helical or conical state, these would be the depictions of the magnon excitation. So this is just a standard magnon, minus Q or plus Q, precessing. Right? But if you look in the Skirman lattice phase, there are three fundamental modes that you can excite with a microwave. There's a clockwise mode, a counterclockwise mode, and this breathing mode, and it's basically the phase relationship of these fundamental modes. So it contains the information that you need for knowing that the topology is there. So this has been worked out in detail with measurements that we did with Dirk Grundler for different materials. And as I'm getting a little short in time, I'm not going to go through this in detail. The point is that they can parameterize this with different materials, right? And you get a universal account of these excitation spectra as seen in microwave resonance experiments, right, for these different samples and sample shapes. So there's excellent agreement, and we really understand which modes are which, okay? And now what we did is just simply do this experiment going into the paramagnetic state. So we do this as a function of field. So we're cutting across like this. These are typical spectra, and one can associate, so one knows precisely which modes are which, and one can distinguish which modes basically survive out here in this paramagnetic state. So this is now for different temperatures, going up in temperature, right, in this direction, as a function of field, right? And we can see that this counterclockwise mode survives in the paramagnetic state. Okay, and that tells us that these fluctuations do have this topological character that we expected, right? But I think that this is, or we think that this is really sort of experimental evidence for this. Okay, now two more slides, nature of the transition. So this is the second last slide. There's a very old theory, goes back to Landau actually. And then Brazovsky wrote a very nice paper on the theory of something called recrystallization. And it, this is sort of the introductory paragraph, right, where they write down the potential in terms of like expanded in the density. And they point out that there are these cubic terms, and whenever you have basically momenta adding up to be triangles, right, then it's particularly efficient and you get a crystallization. So this is a transition which is very close to second order, but first order, right? And that would be the driving mechanism. And that's precisely brings me back to the slide that I showed earlier on. This is precisely this mechanism. So there's a deep analogy to this. And that's why we call this a recrystallization transition. So this is my summary slide. All right. What I try to show you or try to convince you of is that we do see evidence for this recrystallization and that we have this extended skirmion texture. So we don't have like particle-like skirmions in a liquid that just like move around, but they're patches and they're correlated. And the moment we basically switch on a magnetic field here, we get this mechanism that they already form. And then at the transition, they just stabilize. OK? So that's it. Thanks very much.
Thank you. So questions now? For it's OK. First,
two microphones.
OK. So yeah, I have a question about the Brzozowski's transition. So as far as I understand, it's basically he starts with the second order statistical mechanics, second order transition statmac, and then fluctuations, large volume fluctuations, generate cubic terms. So that's, I think, what was in his original paper. So when you say that you see evidence of this transition, what do you actually mean? Is it the fact that it's first order, or what does it mean?
Okay, so there are two Brzozowski papers that I'm referring to in this talk, and the first one was basically on the zero field transition here, right? And I think what you're referring to is the second part where I basically just showed this slide here, right? So is he referring to the first one?
Well, I mean, basically, I think...
Oh, you can ask the same question for both, isn't it? So let's
start
here.
What do you mean, actually? Okay. What's consistent with what?
So what's consistent is basically that the driving term that we see here, which is this cubic term, is something that we also have, the very same term in,
But it simply could be just first order transition to begin
with. It is a first order transition, but it's a very strong fluctuation. So on that level, it is also consistent. So the question you can ask is this, are you permitted to do this type of expansion, or is the first order transition so strong that you're in principle not permitted to do that? And the claim is, and that's basically based on the first example in zero field that I showed, but also on basically what we get in a small field, is that the transition is, there's very strong fluctuations, the transition is very weakly first order. We are allowed to expand it, right? And the terms that we see experimentally basically connect exactly with this thing.
Sorry, and actually, I'm sorry, I had another question. I thought there was an interesting question whether quantum phase transition, once you suppress it to zero, remains first order. Because there you have a smaller volume of fluctuations that Brzozowski's argument breaks down.
So there's this work by Misha Tulakov and Jörg Schmalian, there's a PIL from 2004 or something like this, which actually originally motivated our Hall effect measurements. And there's a debate. So if you talk to some Russian colleagues, they will argue that all we do is wrong. So there's always, but our story is basically that it is first order, the transition is first order. I cannot tell you precisely what the mechanism is. The take is that it's sufficient to just look at single particle density of states and do itinerant magnetism, and if you have like a local minimum in the density of states, you can already get a first order transition. So that is sufficient to explain the first order behavior. Right? I do not have a strong argument that it should be that type of Brzozowski mechanism.
But you see
first order
all over
again. Yeah, right.
Christian, I have a somewhat naive questions about how exactly the skirmion lattice melts. So if you wash the Azo around, how do you crystallize it? Yeah. And the mental picture you gave us is that you have these patches which sort of have preformed skirmions, and then eventually as you cross through the first order transition, you actually build a crystal. Now, in order to create these patches, presumably they're energetically costly. You have to create pairs of vortices or skirmions or anti-skirmions, right? And so my question would be, well, shouldn't you expect to see the latent heat even above the first order phase transition that you see, right? If the claim that in that, could you show the experimental phase diagram on your summary slide? Yes, this
so
one.
The claim so is whether we do have something like latent
exactly.
heat or evidence for this.
That's my question.
Okay, so we do see signatures here. It's very difficult to see anything pronounced there. What you see at zero field is this hump, right, in the specific heat, which would be attributed to these very long-range correlations. And something we haven't really checked, whether there is a remainder of this in this regime here that would tell you that these correlations have formed. I mean, whether the entropy sort of like signals there are these sorts of effects. I would have to check the data, but it's, all of this is sort of like varying very gradually, so I would not be surprised if, you know, that is consistent with the story that I'm telling. Yeah.
So, to some extent, following up on Victor's question, in usual Brzozowski transitions, sometimes you can end up with a glassy state. You just dynamically freeze before you get to the actual first order transition. So there were papers by, I think, Schmalian and Westphal. And so one question is whether you see anything like this, or and the second, but of course, in your situation, however weak the magnetocrystalline anisotropy is, it's not a complete circle. There are some dimples. And
yes.
Whether this helps you
yes.
To avoid the glassy transition or not.
So this has been a big concern also, like at zero fields here, whether the. So what's the story? The story is that, of course, you do still have the cubic anisotropies, right? And you will see on the surface of this these fluctuations, you will see slight maxima of intensity. And then you have to do a more careful analysis. So the art in this 2013 paper was that they really analyzed the correlation lengths, even in this regime, right? It's perfectly consistent with what we see here, right? That we do see a little bit of alignment of these patches, right? And nonetheless, we think that this is basically, as the correlations are really long, it's consistent with the very big pinning potential that we have. Right? So there was one of the when I showed this data Achim Roche a long time ago. Right? So I think we had this data 2010 or something like this. Right? But then his first comment was, well, the correlations cannot be possibly large enough. Right? So they would lock in. And then only after we did some more measurements and really analyzed this properly that we convinced ourselves that it's consistent.
I have a trivial question. How important is there a signature for the patches in your measurements? Or would it also be possible that you just have kind of an opening angle of the magnetic texture in your fluctuations that give rise to the topological Hall signal?
Well, it's a combination, right? So first of all, here we don't see this topological Hall signal, but we understand why. And the thing being that we've tracked the topological Hall signal in quenched in the quenched state, right, and under pressure to low temperatures, and it's basically finite temperature excitation. So you get basically interband excitations, and they destroy the topological Hall effect. It's just because we're here at 30 Kelvin, okay? So let's suppose we do have a topological Hall signal, yeah, since I argue that we see this also at high pressures. This is not the only argument that we have. It's the combination of a Hall effect, susceptibility, small angle scattering, and microwave resonance. And the microwave resonance, there's no signature of like other contributions. We know what they would look like if there's a conical fluctuation. So we believe that, so I started out with a small angle scattering, there are some conical contributions, right? But the microwave spectra basically provide very strong evidence that the volume fraction is very small of those, okay?
I had a question. So based on this phase diagram, these fluctuations you're describing, then as a function of magnetic field, as you cool down, you go into a helical, conical, or skirmion state. So are the fluctuations themselves then either helical fluctuations, conical fluctuations, skirmion fluctuations?
Yeah, the character changes. Yeah.
So the character. So do you see that in that phase diagram? You don't really show that.
No, there's no sharp transition. I think basically what you get is that predominantly in this regime here, you have these skirmion fluctuations.
Everywhere there are skirmions. Why would they be? Why would they not be helical? fluctuations?
This is a very strong mechanism. The moment you provide a little bit of you stabilize a little bit of a field in a magnetization with the applied field, these triple Q modes can couple to that, right? And that's the moment when you basically start to form these patches, right? And then there's a question: what's the lifetime of these patches?
You're saying the fluctuations all skirmion like, irrespective of the magnetic field. No, they have no character.
If this is the way you want to call it, yeah. I think it's important to realize.
Second question would be, and you might have expected that fluctuations would appear at the wave vector corresponding to the helical state or the conical state. They should see that, right? Rather, I'm just wondering. And then the question is, how does the period of the helical and conical states and the size of the skirmion? You didn't really discuss that.
That doesn't change very much. So the Q vector basically is very sensitive. It changes very little as a function of field and temperature. Right? So it's a few percent if you go from like very low temperatures in a helical state up, right? As a function of field, there's essentially no change.
And even as you go to lower temperatures.
So you are in a convenient situation that you only have to look at certain distances in Q. Right, it's very small dependence, which is, I think, understood. So this is something which is perfectly consistent.
What is the skirmion size?
The skirmion size here is about 200 angstroms.
So 200 angstroms, independent of magnetic field and temperature.
Yeah.
And the helical period is the same, presumably.
Yeah, that's right. So I mean, if the skirmions are basically there's like a factor of 2 divided by square root 3. If you have basically a triangular lattice, so this is the lattice constant, right? But the periodicity of the modulation is unchanged.
Then can I ask, you mentioned the triangular lattice, hexagonal lattice.
Yes.
But I think Tokuro reported you could have a square lattice. So where in your phase diagram?
So the story of this is basically they did these quench experiments. So they used the sample itself, because it's metallic, as a heater. Then they plot a small current pulse at low temperatures, heated it up, and then quenched it at like 700 Kelvin per second or something like this. It's a really fast quench. And when they do that, they get a kinetically arrested skirmion lattice at low temperatures. And then the claim is as they change the field that they can get a square lattice. We're a little bit worried about this because they see the spots basically overlapping with some of the helical locations. But, you know, this is...
You see this very carefully, very clearly in Lorentz microscopy, you can clearly
see. The problem with the Lorentz microscopy is always that the samples are thin, and so, you know, they're surface dominated. One has to be careful. This is like comparing apples with pears.
Leslie, you did mention the surface state in some of your own experiments was distinct from the bulk. So if you plotted that phase diagram for the surface state, how would it look?
The skirmion lattice would be hugely extended. It's all over the place. So if you make the samples thin.
The size changes.
The temperature and field regime changes. The modulation length doesn't change.
Very good. All
right, so this is one of the
Huh? Okay, thank you. I won't ask any more questions.
What?
Very nice result.
Stuart isn't asking, but he'd take it away, yes.
Yeah. Much easier this way. Okay, so let's thank Christian again.
Okay, thanks very much.